But the word impossible seems to have been part of this church's story from the very beginning. Back in the early 90s, my husband Ed and I served on a committee of the Northeast District of the UUA that was charged with helping small churches to grow and starting up new churches. This was in the days when all the historic denominations were first really seriously coming to terms with the demographic realities in North America. The old churches, especially in the Northeast, were shrinking in size, aging in membership, no longer able to count on a kind of automatic support from the middle class, from old neighborhoods and ethnic groups, from growing, thriving post-war suburbs. But the UUA, like the denominations, like all denominations, was undertaking a major new church growth initiative. I remember the day we sat in the office of then District Executive Glenn Turner and looked at a map of Maine and talked about where a brand new UU church could possibly take root. Very early on, Belfast emerged as the most likely contender. None of us knew the town well, but it had made an impression on everyone as a place that was plucky chickens? I've no idea if she meant that like that. Creative, free-thinking, and good at forging bonds of community. But when Glenn told the good people at UUA headquarters in Boston that we were going to explore this idea, we received surprising news back. The UUA initiative to start new churches was only intended for starting mega churches. They were only interested in startups with 500 or even 1,000 new members. So much for their vision. So from the earliest days, it seemed that the whole project of a UU church in Belfast was impossible. To Glenn's everlasting credit, he found a diplomatic way to tell where to go to the UUA. He said, "Thank you very much, but we're going to go ahead anyway." So, this is Jill speaking. I called Douglas Coffin, and Douglas is with us today, whom we knew through mutual friends. Douglas called some of his friends. Glenn came up, and they held the first meeting in Douglas's living room. In the months that followed, there were more meetings, more plans hatched, more people identified, until finally it was time to hold the first official worship service in the library. Welcome the new church to the denomination, and things were off and running. As all this was happening here in Belfast, I was receiving my preliminary fellowship from the Ministerial Fellowship Committee, graduating from seminary, and becoming ordained. At some point during these exciting months, there was a phone conversation, then two or three, about the idea of my coming up here to serve as part-time minister. Within a matter of weeks, I was up here for an interview with the committee. I was a nervous wreck and didn't feel I had done a very good job when they sent me out of the room so they could deliberate. When they finally called me back in, I was taken aback when they said they wanted to hire me, but had concerns about my answer to one of their questions. Uh-oh, I thought, trying quickly to think of what stupid thing I had said and could fix. You could have knocked me over with a feather when they told me their concern was that I didn't ask to be paid enough for my time. This was definitely not something the books and conventional wisdom about churches told you to prepare for at an interview, to increase your salary. Over the next year, I came to find out it was typical of the attitude of those who began this church. Let's not settle just for what's possible. Let's stretch ourselves. Let's challenge ourselves to be a little more than anyone thinks we can. Let's try something new. Let's do it our own way. I thought it then, and I thought it 1,000 times since. And she asks, "Was there ever a new minister luckier than me?" Yes. Oops. That was. The district sent me off to Boston for an intensive training for ministers who were being called to various places around the country to help revitalize dying churches or to help midwife newborn ones. But as our ministry together began, it became very clear to me early on that I wasn't here to be a midwife so much as a witness and as a cheerleader. It was like throwing a lit match into a pile of kindling. The energy and open-mindedness and willingness of people to do what was needed to make a UU church happen here never ceased to amaze me. I got to make all my early mistakes with a group of people who did not come to all of this with entrenched ideas and who never once said, "But we've always done it this way." We were all learning and experimenting together. And more than anything else, every moment I spent here with you was just so much fun. I learned that sometimes pursuing the impossible is exactly what leads you to the amazing. We held meetings and parties and classes. We marched on Martin Luther King Day. Children and youth were at the center of things all along with their questions and their exuberance. We learned new songs and danced in the aisles, and when we weren't allowed an open flame in the chalice down at the library, one of our artists just drew and colored a beautiful one, and then we taped it on the chalice and called it good. Serving others and working for justice were part of the DNA of this church from the very first. I visited people in their homes and got lost on every back road there is around here. We laughed and cried and questioned and celebrated. You did what many still think is impossible. You started a new liberal congregation in an illiberal age. You grew and sustained it in a time of historic church decline. You baked a church from scratch, and it has been feeding people now for an entire human generation. I would say, you have fulfilled those early impossible dreams abundantly.
I am delighted to have heard Jill's words. I had counted on having an extra 4 or 5 minutes because I thought, was her not here, why? Funny years, my goodness. Some of you have aged. Wow. My first introduction to this church was back sometime in the late 90s. Cassie and I wandered over to the old Abbott room, the library, and we were warmly welcomed. There was evident joy, real sharing, and some rather spirited singing. Unfortunately, it was difficult for me to join in the singing since so many of the words have been changed. It was even more confusing for me than the gender-inclusive language that I was trying to get right all along. As we left that day, however, I commented to Cassie that I thought it would be very difficult for me to be in such a church, if indeed it even was a church. Ish, I guess. Fast forward 5 years or so to 2002, 2003, somewhere in there, and we found ourselves back at the UU Church, but now in your own building, drawn by the presence of Kate Braestrup. That day, the joy, warmth, and spirited singing were present just as before. The hymns were still messed up, but the service felt very inclusive. It seemed there might be room for us. So as we left, we said, if this is Unitarian Universalism, let's give it a try. And so we did, and I'm deeply grateful for what we've learned in your midst and for what you've given to us. The seven principles resonated very deeply with my own rather unorthodox Christian theology. As some of you know, my own faith is deeply informed by the life and ministry of Jesus. But the traditional doctrines have taken on new forms, new meaning, as I've attempted both to understand and to communicate my faith in ways that could be understood by a wide and rather wild range of UUs. It was both gratifying and totally surprising to me that more than 30 people signed up for an adult study group that met for a number of sessions on Jesus before Christianity. Over the years, I found an openness here to my teaching and preaching that I feared might not be the case. challenge to make sense of my own faith in this community has stretched me and made me much richer for it, and I thank you. Your emphasis on justice was music to my ears. As my own orientation to liberation theology and a lifelong involvement in social justice causes found a community of like-minded allies. Early on, the Social Justice Committee, led by Bill Dopheide, stepped forward to support the startup of the Restorative Justice Project of the Mid-Coast, and then the entire congregation got behind it. None of us knew at that time that this would become such a powerful force in the area. Without this congregation's financial support and personal involvement of so many of you, that work might never have taken hold. Your continued support remains vital to its accomplishment. And for that, I thank you deeply. And then there was the choir. What fun that was. From a motley pickup crew, Lila formed a disciplined, well, that's going too far. Ish. Disciplined-ish choir that has become an inspiration both within the community here and in the much broader community. And I was stunned by the quality. It was wonderful. I missed it. I really do. Good music lifts the soul, it stirs the emotions, and it brings us to our feet in joy and thanksgiving. The choir has been an amazing source of life for this congregation, and I miss being part of that very much. My time is up, so let me conclude my words of celebration by saying, Mazel Tov, and may this congregation live to be 100. Remarkable sign of your growth that is soon you're going to need 4 baskets to take up the offering instead of 2. Today you celebrate 2 decades of incredible, miraculous, impossible growth and success. You stand on the cusp of a new era. You are no longer the infant startup or the youthful explorer. You are now established. Ah. You have a full-time minister, additional staff, a building of your own, and you're now contemplating major renovation. You've made it to adulthood. How will you now live your collective life together? Most of you know the quotation of the Muslim mystic and poet Rumi, who said, "Yesterday I was clever, so I wanted to change the world. Today I am wise, so I am changing myself." Let me suggest that this is only a half-truth. It is true that seeking to change the world without seeking to change oneself can result in self-righteous fanaticism. But focusing on changing oneself without seeking to change the world can result in smug narcissism. The whole truth is that we are responsible to change both our world and ourselves. Either one without the other is incomplete. The wisdom of Scripture captures this tension very well. What shall it profit a person if she gain the whole world and lose her own soul? And equally, whoever would save his life shall lose it. As a congregation, you stand at a crossroad. Growth and renovation are exciting and good. But an inward focus could lead to complacency unless you keep before you the 6th principle of Unitarian Universalism, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. Seeking the transformation of the world, seeking peace for the world, is every bit as critical as seeking inner peace. Do not lose sight of that goal. The quest for a transformed world dare not become a second order of business. I'm reminded of the words of my friend Maggie Kuhn, whom I've shared with you before, who near the end of her life, when she was being carried down the steps daily, said, in ways that I think complete and complement Rumi's words, I may not be able to butter my toast, but I can still work to change the world. So my challenge to you as you enter your third decade is to increase your work and giving for justice just as much as you increase your work and giving to build a better facility and new programs. So be it.
So when I was invited to do this, I began having this image of the basketball hoop in the gym where I first spoke with this congregation many years ago. Thinking about that basketball hoop in the gym that we sat in and the kids off to the side in the room, and the day that I spoke there last, I think, was the day that you voted to decide to call me as a minister. And it was a moment that was profound for me as it was for you, because I never expected that to happen. I went to the interview that I was invited to, and I was kind of thinking, well, you know, could be. I was in seminary, but I thought this would be a good training for me. And I had said to friends not even a couple weeks earlier, you know, if I was going to work for a church, it would be like the one in Belfast. And then I got this phone call, and then the story just goes on and on. And there I was, preaching under the basketball hoop, and then you voted, and then at the end of the service, we all decided to go and sing at a dying member's home outside her window. And I thought, this is ministry. And then I remembered being in the office over by the dance studio. And we moved back into the library after it had been all finished. And I remember being in the library and having people just stop in and say hello. And I just loved it. And I remember getting a phone call late one night. It was Halloween night. And someone calling me and saying, Pam, I just found out my mother is dying. And I thought, welcome to ministry. It was the way it was, my children and Halloween and then being a pastor. And then people said, let's buy this Methodist church. They're leaving, they've got their new one, let's do it. And then we bought this building. And as I sat and remembered, I remembered standing there after they had moved the pews out and the organ was still here. It was a pretty dark place. And standing here alone one day and thinking, oh my, this is ministry. Another brave decision. And I remember coming in this room with the scaffolds up when we decided to paint those colors up there and to paint the ceiling. Jan was up there and others. But it was coming together in a way that was marvelous. And when we found the chairs, think someone found the chairs, I remember, and then we had more chairs, and I think we saved the pews from just a couple pews from the sides, and it just came together. But the miracle of all that coming together was all of you. You know that thing we learned as kids, at least I did, here's a church, here's a steeple, open the doors. The people make the church. That's what you taught me about ministry, is that every heart that walked in this door was valued and important and was someone we needed to listen to and hear and love. Every single one of you. Every single one who is yet to come. And I remembered on 9/11, we had this building just. There wasn't much here, and someone called me in Bangor where I lived and said, I think we should open the church. So we did. We opened the doors, we had candles, and a group of us sat here in a little circle and mourned all that was lost that day. And prayed and brought hope into the world too. And then I remember the weddings here and the child dedications and the child that are like this high now. Oh my gosh. And healing circles that we had in this room for people who were sick. And the many memorial services that happened here in this room. And I knew that we had made this place, as random as it might have seemed at the time we moved in, we've made it sacred with all of those places and beings that have passed through these doors, and with our presence, and with the love and the kindness and the care and the search for justice and being a place where people can come and know they are welcome. I remember becoming all of these other things. We became a green sanctuary. We became a welcoming congregation. We became a place that offered lifespan religious education. We began a caring committee. We began so many things in that time. It was about becoming. And I remembered that on the first Easter service I ever did with you, we were in the library, and I did a Velveteen Rabbit service. And I remembered this reading. He said, "You become. It takes a long time. That's why it doesn't happen often to people who break easily or who have sharp edges or who have to be carefully kept. Generally, by the time you are real, most of your hair has been loved off and your eyes drop out and you get loose in the joints and very shabby. But these things don't matter at all. Because once you are real, you can't be ugly, except to the people who don't understand. You are real, and I hope you celebrate that today with every inch of your being, and celebrate the people who made this happen. There are so many of them, and the people who are sustaining it today and nurturing this. And that you're all holding something that's very precious to give to the next generations that are coming through your doors. The unexpected people." And my last story. There was a day when I pulled up out in front here, and a woman in a very beat up old car got out of the car, and I was opening the door, and she said, "Are you a Christian?" And I said, "Well, yes, I am, and I'm the minister of this congregation. Can I help you?" And she said, "Yes. My son died in St. Louis, I think. and none of the Christian churches in this community will let me have a memorial service for him. So she came into my office and we talked for a long time. And I discovered that her need was very small. She just couldn't get to the memorial service in St. Louis, but wanted to do one here with her family and friends here. So when I called people from the congregation, I think there were about four of us here, and we set up the church for them. We lit candles. They played outrageous punk rock music. And the group of them stood right here, about 10. And they cried and they talked about their lost friend and son. And that moment blessed this church for me. And I hope it blesses all of you with the gift you gave that group that stood here and the gift that you are continuing to give. We are all people becoming real. All of us. Blessed be.
I want to introduce you to someone this morning. His name is Christian David Antonio Ichoy Shekar. He's 4 years old, born on September 11th, 2014. And we were with him at Safe Passage in Guatemala. Max Howard, in particular, remembers playing with him when we were there at the preschool. This past fall, we shared the plate 1 month with Safe Passage with the idea, actually, of sponsoring a child. Now, we didn't quite get to the $600 needed to do this, so the group who went to Guatemala agreed to supplement the funds. And so here he is, the child from Safe Passage that we and the youth are sponsoring this year. I have to tell you that one of the aspects of this church that attracted me so much when I was in search is how important the children were in this congregation. I also admit that I measure, in part, a congregation's health and well-being by the energy and attitude towards its children. Fortunately, the RE program was and remains a priority, and our children are seen as a blessing. During the week, again, during the search, almost 4 years ago, when you were interviewing me and I was interviewing you, I met your high schoolers, the five girls. You've heard of the five guys? Those are the five gals or girls. Rowan, Emma, Jesse, Audrey, and Mika. Now, I remember asking them if they would be interested in creating a youth group. By the way, they could vote, too, which was awesome. They responded that if I provided pizza, they would be there. It's true. Now, it might not have been the deepest conversation I have ever had, but it didn't matter. The youth group had been formed. Within a year, the youth group was in New Orleans on its first service trip. We went with two other UU youth groups, one from Bangor and the other from Ellsworth. And the friendships among us all grew. And the conversations became deeper. And the awareness of the injustices and inequities that exist in this country and in the world grew as well. The youth group did a local service project a year later in eastern Maine at Mano and Mano. And this past July, 22 of us from the three churches went on another service project trip to Safe Passage in Guatemala, where we helped and played and taught and loved the beautiful Mayan children like Christian. And I love the irony that his name is Christian in a UU church. It's wonderful. In 3 months, a new youth group will be going to New Orleans. Only this time, it's with three other churches because Rockland is included. how extraordinary all of this is to me. And none of this could have happened or be happening without you. Sure, the youth and I will take some credit, right? But this congregation is willing to make the seemingly impossible possible. It is willing to be creative in what it does and how it does things. It is willing to look at itself when it fails to meet its own values and principles and to ask for forgiveness. It is willing to have a vision that transcends itself. It is willing to experience the pain along with the joy. It is willing to support the children here and there. We three ministers, and Jill in her heart, are here this morning because we have tremendous respect and love for this faith community and for you. You are a blessing, and we love you dearly. You are a gift. Never, never doubt that. And never, never doubt the ministry of which you are capable. Blessed be.